Welcome in to today's episode of the Blanket Coverage Podcast. We're recording this on Thursday, September the 3rd. We've got NBA recap and preview. We've got some college football news as well as some NFL news. We can't wait to get into it, and so we should do that now. What's up, Jack? How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you. It's been a great day so far. Very excited to look in for the pretty wild ride we have ahead of us with a lot of the NBA games wrapping up in round one and round two subsequently beginning. It's in a good transition period going through the rounds for us, but pretty exciting to see everything pan out in what has been bizarre is putting it lightly, but bizarre into this NBA season, and a little bit of a look at what perhaps could come next. Because I know some coaches have talked about that. I know Mark D'Antoni with the Houston Rockets mentioned that a little bit of his contract expiring at the end of the season of what is the NBA going to look like post-bubble, because we're approaching it ever so quickly due to the playoffs going deeper and deeper. But to start off with our first piece of news coming out just today, we have another star in Brooklyn. We got Kyrie, we got KD, and now Steve Nash is the new Nets head coach. What do you think of this move?
You know, I really like it. I think Steve Nash, and I've listened to some podcasts that Steve Nash has done, and I've seen his work just breaking down and talking about the game of basketball, and he is extremely knowledgeable. He has an incredible basketball IQ. I mean, you talk about great basketball IQ guys, Chris Paul, Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, they're all Hall of Fame basketball IQ guys. And so I think it's a logical transition. He's been assistant coaching. I believe he was on the Warriors as an assistant coach and got a ring with them.
Yeah, so it's exciting to see a player of this caliber go on and get to be in a good position, of course, post-playing. But to go on to our first game, to recap, we have Nuggets, Jazz, and oh man, what an incredible series this was, an incredible ending. Definitely not the game we would have predicted. I was going to say earlier, I'm very glad I didn't say this on air, but I was thinking earlier, gotta bet the over. You should not have bet the over. Neither team broke past 85 points in a defensive slugfest. And I actually tried to document a good chunk at the end of this game, but with 2:40 left in the second quarter, zero total threes between Murray and Mitchell. Mind you, they put up, I think it was 18 combined in one of the last previous games. A 50-36 lead for Denver after an abysmal performance from Mitchell, 7 points and 5 turnovers. Utah had the fewest points in a first half since 2012. Denver went on a 4-for-6, 4 out of 16 missed streak as Mitchell continued to drop dimes into the third quarter. Utah down only 60-55 on a 19-10 run. Then another 13-0 Utah run, giving the Jazz the lead. With 2 minutes to go, both teams locked down, neither over 80 points. Tie game with 45 to go after a Rudy Gobert dunk, and then a huge Jokic shot to break the tie with 27 seconds left and a timeout for the Jazz of 22. Last play ended up really getting screwed up, had to call their last timeout with 17 seconds left, and then the insanity. Jazz inbound, Mitchell drives in right down the middle, ball is poked loose, Nuggets recover, and they go all the way back for a layup. Mind you, as the clock is nearing expiring and they're up, the layup is missed. Ball given right back. Mike Conley has it with an open three for the win and the series, and he missed it. Ball just goes right in and out. It was inches away from going in, and Denver wins by 2 at the final score. Nikola Jokic, the hero, a 30-14-4 game for the big man, and what a choke job that Utah performed here, though it was weird because, like we were saying earlier, it didn't feel like a choke job, even though it was 3-1.
Yeah, I mean, Denver looked really good, and they honestly looked like the better team throughout the last part of this series. And I kind of liken this series more or less to not necessarily a heavyweight boxing match, but maybe more of a Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, welterweight type of boxing match. You know, these are two teams that can play defense, that can both do a lot of things really well, and they both do some things very poorly. But when you look at this game, the hero of it for the Nuggets was Jokic, because he came up big, 30 points, 11 rebounds, 14 rebounds, 4 assists. But Jamal Murray, even though he played 41 out of a possible, I believe, 48 minutes. Only 7 for 21, 1 for 6 from 3, only shot 2 free throws, 2 rebounds, and 4 assists. So they were really taking Murray out of the offense. Big to see Jokic step up. And they were that was really it for the Nuggets because no one else is scoring any points. Paul Millsap with 2, Jeremy Grant with 2, Monte Morris with 7. The only other Nugget in double figures was Michael Porter for this game, and he played 17 minutes on 3 for 7 shooting. Torrey Craig played 34 minutes and only scored 7 points. Gary Harris scored 4 points in 26 minutes. And, of course, Jeremy Grant on 35 minutes, 3 points. Just not a great offensive showing. And the Jazz are a good defensive team. I mean, Rudy Gobert is a multi-time defensive player of the year for a reason, but just a really slugfest kind of sloppy game that was really entertaining and just a heartbreaker for the Jazz. Though we did hear Donovan Mitchell signing a max extension as soon as free agency opens. So the Jazz have a solid future ahead. They've got to figure out what they're going to do about the Gobert problem, though, because that doesn't seem like it's going to work for the foreseeable future if they want to get better as a team.
My final takeaway from this game is that the whole series was Mitchell versus Murray. Last night we saw Jazz versus Nuggets.
Right.
And we saw what can the teams do, not the players. Because when you take them both out, not literally, because of course they both did play the whole games, there weren't any issues with them. But when you take them out of the equation, who do you have left and how do they match up? And at the end of the day, it was really close and it was really hard fought. And there was, I mean, clearly there was, it was very, very tight. But it was sort of bizarre because out of the two, Mitchell clearly had the better game at the end of the day, putting what I think it was 22 points, his final tally. And then Murray not really doing that much, but it was the Nuggets that came away because they are just the stronger team. And then now they have the, I'm not sure if it's right word, but privilege, I guess, of going to play the Los Angeles Clippers in the next round, which should be a fantastic Western Conference semifinal. But looking ahead to the next game, which just was the game that occurred just last night, the most recent game out of anybody talking about, and that is Rockets Thunder, a very, very tight game. And while I incorrectly picked, we both picked Denver in the last game, so we both got right. But with Rockets Thunder, I did get this one trusting the Rockets finally did pay off for me. And very, very interesting ending to this game with Rockets Thunder. And not as interesting as the refs of the Milwaukee Heat game, which we'll get to a lot later. But interesting refereeing going on in this game. James Harden in a really, really bizarre game, a 4-for-15, pretty horrific offensive day. But his defensive prowess showing with an incredible block to seal the series. And I mean, good for Harden to have to show off a different side of him we tend to not see as much.
And I forget if it was Miami or if it was, it was OKC in Houston. The last 2 seconds of that game took a combined 13 minutes because of reviews and because of timeouts. It was a very bizarre end. Props to James Harden, even though he didn't have a big game scoring. I believe he was held under 20 points on the night. He still came up big on the defensive end, which is not something we've said about James Harden very often. He's not known for his defense, but of course he got the block on Lugans Dort. And I don't see how Dort is your guy in that situation. I mean, I know he's the only guy who's been putting up any offense all night, but are you not going to give the ball to CP3? Or are you not going to throw the ball to Steven Adams down in the post when you only need 2 points to force overtime? Are you not going to give the ball to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, maybe try to get a foul from these officials who obviously are very foul happy at the end of games? I mean, you saw it. We'll talk about the end of Miami and Milwaukee. The officials are obviously foul happy at the end of games. It was an interesting stat at the beginning of the game, though, because Scott Foster was announced as the crew chief for this game and served as the crew chief last night. The Rockets had lost the last 9 games, playoff games, that they had that had been refereed by Scott Foster. And Chris Paul specifically had lost the last 7, I believe, games that he'd played against or that were refereed by Scott Foster. So something had to give last night, and I think it was ultimately the better team in this situation. But props to the Thunder for having heart and scrapping the whole series, because this is the standard performance that we've seen from Houston the last 3 or 4 years in the playoffs.
Yeah, really interesting to see how it'll play out against the Lakers coming up next round. Looking ahead to the East, again, we have a lot fewer games to cover, of course, if we are now with the round two, so these will be a lot quicker. But Bucks Heat, what in the world was this ending? And yes, it's also last night. This was absolutely absurd. And honestly, watching both the calls again, because if you all aren't entirely sure what we're talking about, please do watch the end of this game, first of all. But Milwaukee drove down, and if I'm not mistaken, was it Middleton who got up to take the three? And the Heat stepped up into his lane, but it was really iffy if it was or wasn't.
No. I can sort of visualize it right now. Chris Middleton steps in to shoot a three, and Goran Dragic is coming out to contest. Now, as soon as Chris Middleton goes up for this shot, Goran Dragic stops moving his feet. He's standing in place. He's no longer moving. He's standing straight up with his hands up. And then Middleton jumps forward on the shot, thus landing where Goran Dragic was already standing in completely legal guarding position, simply contesting a shot. Chris Middleton lands on him, foul gets called, and it's now, what, a two-point ball game? No, it's a tie ball game at that
point. Yes, it's all so Middleton made all
the Bucks were down three at the beginning of that possession. Then, on the other end of the floor, Jimmy Butler with what's frankly a terrible shot, a fadeaway shot on the other end to win the ball game, and Giannis jumps to contest the shot and can't get around Butler, and his left hand shoves Butler a little bit just in trying not to run into
and group language there.
His hand kind of gently guided Jimmy Butler.
I mean, it was really light
landing from the shot. He had already completed his follow through and everything. He was just coming down from the shot. Giannis couldn't get around him because he didn't want to truck through Jimmy Butler and definitely get called for the foul. But he just kind of sort of gently rested his hand on Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler falls over. Foul gets called with 0.0 left on the clock. Jimmy Butler makes two free throws, and that's your game, folks. Miami is now 2-0 in the playoff, 2-0 in this series, 6-0 in the playoffs.
I don't even know what to do with this because it's like I understand, and I get people saying get more mad at the rule than the refs, at least for the first one with messing in that lane, and is that right or is it not right? The commentators were arguing about this for a while, listening to it last night. If it's very, very iffy. And to me, I frankly thought both were pretty terrible calls, which I guess you can argue can offset, but that's not really how basketball works. So it's – they're both bad, so they're both bad. But I don't know. I thought both were pretty poor calls. The Giannis one was incredibly soft, having him just sort of light – I mean, he was lightly grazing coming down from a jump. He wasn't affecting the shot at all. There's not really an argument I don't see for having it affected the shot at all versus just getting in his face, but obviously that's legal. So I don't know. This game seemed like to end a pretty bad way, and it's a shame that it had to end like that. But either way, Miami is the first number five seed to hold a 2-0 lead over a number one seed.
Here's sort of the larger point of what I want to get at in this game is that you look at it in the third quarter, about 6 minutes left in the third quarter, Milwaukee is down 3 points. 4 minutes left in the third quarter, it is a tie ball game at 78. If you're Milwaukee, if you think you're a championship caliber team and that you can go out there and win a championship, take down LeBron James, take down Kawhi Leonard, if you want to be in that category, you have to make the third quarter count in these close, scrappy ball games. Because if Milwaukee goes on a little run in the third quarter, now granted, they made up some ground. They were down 11 points at one point in the third quarter, and they made up some ground. But when you're tied and you're on the ropes, you've got to steal that momentum away from Miami. And they just couldn't do it. I mean, we saw teams like the Warriors. You remember the Warriors? I used to call them the third Warriors. which is a terrible pun, but because they would always, always, always separate themselves in games as one of the greatest teams of all time, in my opinion, by going on a run in the third quarter so that teams didn't have any confidence going into the fourth quarter, because now you're going into the fourth quarter and you've got to guard Steph Curry and you've got to guard Klay Thompson and you've got to guard Kevin Durant. And that completely kills a team's morale when you kill them and kill their confidence late in the third quarter, and now they have an uphill battle. Milwaukee couldn't do that. I think all the great teams can do that and do that on numerous occasions. But Milwaukee didn't do that, and I don't know. I may be starting to rethink the Bucks as a championship caliber team.
And I do agree with that. I think it's very difficult to see this team as bigger and better. And I get you have Giannis being one of the best players, if not the best player in the NBA at the moment. I mean, you can definitely make an argument for it, but as of recently, it's very difficult to make an argument for that. And it's troubling to see a player of this caliber and this being this strong and yet not being able to support the rest of your team. And I get Miami's an extremely hot, incredibly solid team right now, and that's very difficult to get around. But at the end of the day, you can't go down 0-2 to a 5 seed. No one has ever done that. I mean, this is the first time in NBA history this has happened, and that's really a serious problem for this team that's now 100% on the ropes. And, I mean, we have actually – no, I apologize. We haven't had this happen. I was thinking of the Bucks. It was the first time a number 5 seed has gone on 2-0 lead over the number 1 seed. Since 1984, only 4 number 1 seeds versus any seed have gone down 2-0. And the first one was Phoenix Suns in 1993 in a best of 5, who they won. And then the Boston Celtics in 2017, both those teams rallied to win. And then, of course, the Toronto Raptors in 2 years ago against the Cavs were down 2-0 and went on to lose. So if you remember that number one seed in 2018, last 2 years, Toronto Raptors being
number one. Yeah, that was the LeBronto year.
Yeah, so that was when – yeah, so that was that year. But pretty intense coming out of this time in Miami, but – we'll see if they're able to bounce back, and they, as in the Bucks, bouncing back. Because at this point, it's looking pretty drastic. Because if it gets 3-0, I mean, that's might as well all she wrote.
You talk about bouncing back. Let's talk about a team that needs to bounce back in a big way. The Toronto Raptors are getting manhandled by the Boston Celtics so far. I don't know what else to say. I'm very, very impressed by the maturity that the Celtics have shown in this series, because I thought the Raptors were clearly the most mature team on the floor or in the playoffs, and I thought their defense was quite frankly stellar, but it seems like the Celtics sort of have them figured out, and they figured out how to get a lot of open shots.
Exactly, and that's sort of this way that this Boston team works is, and we're sort of seeing that a lot in the playoffs now, thinking about it, that a lot of these teams that are much more, I don't know if this makes sense, but team focused, ones that have not necessarily just one massive player like what we've seen with Giannis and the Bucks, is they have something like the Heat, something like the Celtics, where you clearly have your Jimmy Butlers, your Jason Tatums, you have these guys that are very, very big on these teams that are the main contributors, but you're able to rely on other players and be able to spread your game out. And that was sort of the danger that a lot of Jazz and the Nuggets had, is you're relying so heavily on Mitchell and Murray that it's what else is your considered supporting cast do. And it looks like that there doesn't seem to be as much of a supporting cast in Boston and also in Miami, because they both are just so well-rounded themselves. And I mean, we can see that. I mean, Marcus Morris with 5 straight threes in a row, and Boston was down 12 before for a 3-minute, 4-second run of 16 straight points. I mean, these big kind of bursts from this team, Tatum with 34, 6-0 for the Celtics, longest streak since 2017. Their franchise record is 7. And when they did that, they won the 1986 NBA title, or en route to winning it. And also a fun fact in this game, Robert Williams for the Celtics went 5-for-5 in the first half, which sounds like not a really big deal, but that was the first time he'd taken that many shots at all in a first half. So you're having players that are, I mean, just guys out of nowhere that are coming in and just banging these shots and having a huge contribution for this team. Also from the Toronto side, Kyle Lowry with 3+ steals in 10 games this year, including the playoffs. That's his 10th straight year of performing that feat. And in the first half alone, Toronto shot zero free throws, which is the first time in the playoffs since 2016 for the Raptors. Walker went 0 for 8 from the field, and Smart is the second player with 5 threes in the fourth quarter. The only other guy to do it, Jamal Murray, who did it twice.
Yeah, Marcus Smart's been really incredible, and I thought all along that he's kind of the X factor for this Boston team, and he's kind of the heart and soul of this team. So it's great to see him playing well, and I think if he plays well, that they have a really, really great chance to not only make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, but maybe even to the finals. You never know what you could see. We could, for all we know, it is not even remotely out of the realm of possibility to see an undefeated in the playoffs Boston versus an undefeated in the playoffs Miami for a spot in the finals against James Harden, LeBron James, or Kawhi Leonard.
Exactly, and it's going to be pretty interesting to see sort of how this pans out along these teams that we sort of thought were these bigger squads. But again, the East continues to get murkier and murkier and murkier, and what will come out of this absolutely wild conference. And so to move on to now look at our final picks for our conference semifinals, we have Boston-Toronto in Game 3, Miami-Milwaukee in Game 3, and then Denver-LA Clippers and Houston-LA Lakers both in Game 1. And who do you got for Boston-Toronto?
I got Boston. I think momentum, especially in this sort of a bubble situation where there's no home court advantage, I think momentum might be the most important thing of all. In these series, and you saw once Denver got momentum at the end of that series, and once Gary Harris came back, and once Jamal Murray started really stepping up, Utah was basically helpless until Game 7. In 5 and 6, they were not looking great out there. So I'm going to go with the team that has all the momentum right now, and that's the Boston Celtics in this series.
I'm going with Toronto just because I have enough faith in them and the way they perform for them to have any kind of effort. At this point, it's a last-ditch effort. This is their last opportunity. If nothing happens here, you pretty much can guarantee Boston's going to win this series. I think Toronto has enough fight and enough talent in them to not have a game like this blown like they did in 2018. Looking at the Miami-Milwaukee game, of course, Miami up 2-0. And, you know, I got Miami again here. I mean, I think Milwaukee is definitely good enough to do something, but looking at the way they reacted to that last game and seeing go out of them, I think it's a much more mental game than anything else. And I think mentally, this team just looks completely lost out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going with the opinion that until Milwaukee proves to me that they are a championship team, after the last two performances in this series, I can't pick against Miami. And I can't pick Milwaukee until they prove to me once again that they are a championship caliber team.
Looking at Denver Clippers, I think on this one we're in agreement here. I like this Denver team, but the Clippers have been looking hot recently, and this Clippers team has a bone to pick and something to prove for this NBA playoff series, and I just really like the Clippers in this one.
Well, one of these teams just got out of one of the most brutal Game 7s in recent memory, and the other team just scored 150 points on a team that I think, frankly, would beat Denver in a series. So, by virtue of the property of the transitive property, or I don't know, I'm not a mathematician.
That sounds right.
At any rate, the Los Angeles Clippers are going to win this game.
Yeah, it was so tall. I mean, you could even look on Jamal Murray's face like when they said, "You got a game in a couple days." He said, "We don't get another day off." I mean,
yeah, it's pretty clear that they are spent after that series.
Yeah, that was really tolling on them, and good for the Clippers to get things out of the way early. So Houston, LA, I had the Lakers in this one only because Houston just looked so shaky in the last game. I know they did win, but it was a really tight win against a Thunder team that was, I think, underrated, but it still is the Thunder, and this is the Lakers, and I think that's two completely different animals, one of themselves. I think this Lakers team is very, very solid. They came off a huge high over beating the Trailblazers, and after losing the first game in that series, I don't think they're going to make that same mistake again.
Here's the thing. And maybe this is going a little bit more into the basketball sort of, more the X's and O's of it. But I think Houston is going to, much like they did Steven Adams in the last series, I think Houston is going to render JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard completely unplayable. I think you're going to have to play Anthony Davis at the center, and maybe they're better like that. Maybe they're better suited to beat some of these teams like that. But anytime, that's going to open up the lane so much. And unless Anthony Davis can be Defensive Player of the Year level Anthony Davis, I think Houston is just going to cause a lot of problems for this Lakers team. And I think they've got a deep bench to throw at Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And they've got enough fouls to give. And I think Harden is sort of out for blood. He knows he didn't play well in that last game, but he affects the game in different ways than just his scoring. And I think that's a part of his game that's really evolved. That being said, sometimes he can be too selfless and not show enough drive and motivation. But all that being said, I think Houston is going to cause a lot of problems for these Lakers. And I think they're going to come away with the win in game one, much like the Blazers did last series.
Exactly. I agree with sort of looking at that ahead with Houston, but I feel like the Lakers are too strong. They're too much for them. After Harden's performance last game, I do look at him to bounce back, but that was just too much of an issue, and I'm just not sure how that's going to pan out for the Rockets in the series. So going ahead to our pretty small section of college football, we do have a little bit of looking ahead. Of course, college football has begun very slightly. We are having a couple games tonight. We are getting some group of five teams. I'm pretty sure Southern Miss is one of the teams.
Southern Miss and South Alabama, I believe.
Yes, which is a Conference USA matchup. So we are having a few things come back. Nothing really major coming soon. I know SEC is a couple weeks off. Big 12 is next week. Actually, I think SMU TCU is going to be the first Power 5 game of the year.
Next Friday night?
If I'm not mistaken, I think it's the first group of five versus Power 5 one, like American versus, I mean, technically you can say Power 6 or Power 3 or it's so weird this year because of the Big Ten and SEC still being off. So if you want to make a new Power 4, I guess you have the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC, and the American Conference. You can kind of count in a Power 4. So under those rules and that logic, the first of those Power 4 quote-unquote games will be between TCU and SMU in their 100th Battle for the Iron Skillet. But to look at some other games besides that, we do have those games coming up on the small version. We will continue doing our picks for the best games of the week like we did last year. We'll continue doing that. Of course, we're not doing this yet because we're not getting around to it, but the college football preview for y'all should be up sometime later this weekend or perhaps early next week, but definitely before the games all start up in a week from tomorrow, which is very exciting. A little bit of news from the college football world so far. A really, really big piece in the SEC. Jamie Newman, the Wake Forest transfer to the University of Georgia, is sitting out this season. Really, really bad news for Georgia. JT Daniels, of course, is going to be coming in from USC, which he arguably is better anyway, but there was an incredible amount of hype and a lot of mental strain being put on Jamie Newman, and having him out, I think, is going to be a big problem for Georgia, especially with the Florida team that is very much improved and looking to take over an East that is ripe for taking over. Again, a lot of people are picking Florida to win the SEC East this year. Though for Georgia, if you only lose the Florida game and you win out, it might not matter because, of course, with the playoffs this year, you don't have to worry about the Big Ten or the Pac-12 team, which, of course, usually isn't a problem because when did the Pac-12 actually make the playoffs in the last 2 years? But especially this year when there actually can't be an argument. And now if you're Georgia and you lose the Florida game, you might be fine because let's say Alabama goes undefeated. Florida, I mean, loses one random game, but they win the tiebreaker with Georgia. And then Florida gets blown out in the SEC championship. Well, you might as well send Georgia into the playoffs. So if you're Georgia, you might end up being fine no matter what happens if you win the SEC or not. You don't even have to win your division to get in. Maybe they can pull in Alabama based on name recognition and other wins alone. So they just need someone competent back there. And JT Daniels definitely is there. So still a big problem for Georgia. But I think Daniels being in can make it where the season will still be solved. But that at least eliminates a backup.
I think they'll be fine. They have one of the most crowded rooms in the country. I know they have a five-star coming in this year. I think they had another five-star who's sitting behind JT Daniels currently. So I think the Dogs are going to be fine. Ultimately, I think they're still just as much of a national championship contender, and you don't need a guy who's going to sit back there and sling the ball all around the field. We've seen Kirby Smart's team. We've seen how he wants to win games. He wants to run the ball.
And that is true as well. Looking ahead to the piece out of the Big Ten, which of course is not a whole lot going in the Big Ten due to them not actually playing this season. But out of them, the condition myocarditis, which is an inflammation of the heart muscle, which is one of the biggest reasons they shut the season down. Turns out about 30 to 35% of Big Ten athletes who have COVID or have had COVID now have been diagnosed with myocarditis, which is a big issue. And again, this is all athletes. It's not just football. And this is also preliminary. So do be aware with a grain of salt. This is preliminary testing. This is not a finality or big massive result. Of course, we have had reports come out of phase one and phase two vaccines being issued or beginning to be issued, phase one, phase two in trials, and expecting a vaccine before the end of 2020 now seems to be a prediction and perhaps maybe a consensus. We're not fully sure on it, but it looks like these things are coming perhaps sooner than we may have thought. Either way, that can definitely see how that can impact perhaps the spring football to some degree, and of course how basketball season works, with most basketball season being in the spring regardless. We may have mentioned, I'm not sure if we mentioned last podcast, but March Madness is pretty much a lock to occur. Whether that's going to be with or without fans is still yet to be seen. As of right now, which again, I'm aware we just entered September, which is a long way from March. But as of now, it looks like all those things are going to be on and fans are pretty much going to be TBD. Of course, there's really no plan you can do for that. But in terms of the college football playoffs, I'm pretty sure the college football playoffs will be occurring.
They're still planning to meet. They've announced the dates.
Which is really bizarre considering that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are supposed to still play after that. So we're not too sure what's going to happen. Like, could there be a second Rose Bowl?
They'll just play the Rose Bowl.
That could work. And if you're a Mountain West team, you just play the winner of the MAC. I mean,
I don't know. This is going to be the biggest asterisk season in history.
Oh, especially, yeah. Whoever wins the national title this year still will have had a good chunk of it deserved. I mean, obviously, conference titles won't need an asterisk this year because
I'm sure UCF will still try to claim it.
Hey, if a poll ranks them as a national champion, they have free reign to count it.
Exactly. Getting on to some NFL update news, some pretty menial news here. Josh Gordon sold his Super Bowl 53 ring for $138,000 at auction. Speaking of rings, the Super Bowl rings came in for the Chiefs. They had their ring ceremony, and Patrick Mahomes gave a ring of his own to his girlfriend, now fiance. So be on the lookout if you're into NFL quarterbacks getting married. I don't know. Maybe there's some sect of the population that's like a huge fan of that. Be on the lookout for that. The NFL announced that all of their facilities will be closed on Election Day to ensure that everyone can vote. I like that. I love the initiative. Very good. Everyone needs to get out and vote. I just got my voter registration card in the mail the other day. So pretty pumped to I'm pumped to participate in democracy.
I know it's a little weird because both of us are out of state, so it's a little trickier for us to get that handled, but I'm pretty sure I have mine down. I checked online and said that I was registered, so I'll make sure to double check that and make sure I'm good to go for November, but be a little finicky on it. I did also want to mention, this is a breaking news that occurred just now, just happened in the middle of it. Ja Morant is your official 2020 NBA Rookie of the Year. I know this was pretty obvious looking forward to it because Zion Williamson being one of the top candidates, as well as Kendrick Nunn for the Miami Heat. Both those guys being very solid this year, but Zion without a lot of playing time, and then Ja just having straight up much better stats than Nunn. So I think very well deserved. I think Morant was pretty far and away the best deserving of the year. Of course, with Zion being out, I think if he had played a full season, it would be a much better debate. But as of what it stands and the stats we have, I think that's a very pretty predictable from the beginning of the year. But yeah, it's good to see for him and a really bright future in Memphis.
The Grizz are back, baby. Grit and grind. In other news, this one's really interesting. And I actually I have a story about this. So Leonard Fournette, who was released by the Jags the other day, it got picked up by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last night. And listen to this. The news was announced during my fantasy draft last night while I was on the clock. And I picked up Leonard Fournette in like the 12th round.
Wow. So very lucky.
Very lucky.
Very lucky indeed.
Shouts out to my roommate for blurting that out to the whole room right when I went on the clock.
Maybe not the best timing for him. Last couple of notes. Seahawks re-signed Josh Gordon. So after selling his Super Bowl ring, gets right back onto the Seahawks. Maybe he gets a chance this year.
Get that paper.
And then your Tennessee Titans signing veteran kicker, former Patriot Steven Gostkowski. He was on my fantasy team for a few years. But, yeah, should be a decent signing coming out of there. I know he's an aged veteran, but he has been very solid for the Pats.
I just hope to God he can make a 35-yard field goal.
A very low bar indeed.
Yeah, we have a low bar for kickers in Tennessee.
No pun intended.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Blanket Coverage Podcast. We're going to be back next week with the big football previews. We're also going to be still covering the NBA because we love basketball. Not as much as we love football, but we do love basketball. I think I'm speaking for both of us. I don't know about you.
Of course. No doubt here.
Either way, thank you so much once again for tuning in. Please continue to tune in on Spotify or on SoundCloud or on TCU 360. For now, I'm Noah Parker.
And I'm Jack Wallace.
Peace, y'all.
Peace out, y'all.